Let's do it. Okay, so today's daf is Baba Kama daf Chaf Ches. We are holding, I think this is where I got up to, and also where you guys got up to, the Tashima, on Chaf Ches Amar Aleph. Just to jog our memory a little bit, the Gemara at the end of Chav Zayin Amar Beis concluded with a Machlokes Rav Yehuda and Rav Nachman about whether Ovid Inish Dina Lenafshe, whether a person is entitled to, is expected to, go ahead and take matters into his own hands and judge things or, you know, take care of things on his own without going to Beis Din, without having Beis Din adjudicated for him. So the Gemara had said that everybody agrees in a situation where there's financial loss, a makom de'ikab seida, then everyone's entitled to go ahead and take things into their own hands. The machlokas between Rav Yehuda and Rav Nachman is just in a case where there's no financial loss, but makom de'lekab seida, whether a person is allowed to take matters into their own hands. Rav Yehuda maintains lo avid inish dina lenafshe, that a person is not allowed to take matters into his own hands, and Rav Nachman says avid inish dina lenafshe, that a person can take matters into his own hands. So the Gemara in Amud Aleph, basically all the way into the Mishnah, is just going to bring proofs for and against Rav Yehuda and Rav Nachman. The Gemara is going to start with a bunch of kashas against Rav Yehuda. Rav Yehuda said lo avid inish dina lenafshe, and all these cases seem to indicate that a person can take matters into his own hands. And then the Gemara is going to have many questions against Rav Nachman. And that'll take us basically to the Mishnah. Now, in Amud Beis, and jumping from the Mishnah, the Gemara is basically just going to discuss the various parameters of a bor b'shir sarabim, of a pit in the public domain, and how it damages, both according to Rav and according to Shmuel. So we'll have to come to that, but let's start for now with Tashima on Dav Chav Ches Amud Aleph. So says the Gemara, Tashima, Shor she'ala gabi chaver lehorgo, uva balatachton v'shamanet shelo v'nafel elyon umeis, pater. So let's go back. If an ox is ala al gabe chaver lehorgo, it jumps or lands or rises on top of a different shore, a different ox, in order to kill it. Uba bala tachton v'shamaret shelo, and the owner of the shore that's on the bottom, who is now in danger, who's potentially going to be killed, comes and removes his shore, takes his ox out of the line of fire, out of danger. V'nafa elyon umeis, and then the shore that's on top, the higher ox, because it's no longer resting on the lower ox, falls and dies. Potter, so we assume that the owner of the lower ox, the lower shore, who removed his ox from the line of fire, is potter, is exempt from that. My love, asked the Gemara, aren't we dealing with the case of bimua, delek apseida? So the Gemara says, this case, which says that if you remove your ox, you're potter, presumably is discussing a case where the higher shore, the upper ox, is muad, is likely to gore, in which case it would have to pay nezek shalem, it would have to pay complete payment if it injures your shore. And yet the Gemara says that you're pater. So this seems to be a case where there's no financial loss, because if something happened to your ox, if something happened to your shore, the guy would pay you complete payment. And nonetheless, it sounds like you're entitled to go ahead and remove your ox. So seemingly that would be a kasha on Rav Yehuda, who said that b'makom d'lek apseida, in a case where there's no financial loss, lo avin inish dina lenafshe, that a person is not allowed to take matters into their own hands. So we have a strong kasha against Rav Yehuda. So answers the Gemara for Rav Yehuda, lo, betam de'ikab seida. No. You thought we were dealing with the shor mu'ad, in which case the person who's damaged is going to receive full payment and there's no financial loss. But really, we're dealing with a shor tam, a shor that is not likely to core, in which case there is seida. Why? Because we're assuming, like the Rabbanan here, I believe, that you're only going to receive chatzi nezek, you're only going to, unless we're dealing with Rosh Hashanah Rabim, but we're dealing with a case where you're only going to receive partial payment. So you do stand to lose financially because you're only going to receive half of the value of your shore in exchange. In which case, it's a makom de'ikab seida. It's a place where there is a concern of financial loss. And in such a case, both Rav Yehuda and Rav Nachman agree that a person is entitled to take matters into their own hands. So this is not a kasha on Rav Yehuda. So ask the Gemara Baiter.
Maybe it has nothing to do with this issue of whether there's a loss or not a loss. Maybe it's butter because it's a grama. Grama ben azokin.
Oh, interesting. So that's going to be more of the Gemara's discussion. I guess we spoke about it the last couple days. Very interesting. Certainly a possibility. I don't know. I didn't see anybody who raised that issue, but I guess the assumption here is that this would not be considered grama menizikin, or maybe we're assuming according to one who does judge for grama menizikin, but certainly an interesting possibility.
He's not directly damaging the upper shirt on top.
Right.
It's just saving his own thing.
Yeah. Potentially that's another answer that you could have given, but because we brought this as a kasha according to Rav Yehuda, so Rav Yehuda has a way out of that question, because either way he could establish it as not being a case The lekup say they're rather a case of ikup say that because we're dealing with the tam and not a muad, but certainly also a possibility that it would be grumim and azikin, and anyway it'd be pater. So we could explain the case, but that might not justify actually why a person can go ahead and take matters into their own hands. So according to Rabbi Yehuda, we can simply justify that by saying it's a case where we're dealing with a short tam, and therefore you do stand to incur a financial loss, and that would entitle you to go ahead and take matters into your own hands. So continues the Gemara. So according to Rabbi Yehuda, that the case that we're dealing with is a short tam, is an ox that's unlikely to gore. That makes the end of the Tashma, the end of the case, very difficult to read. Why? Because the end of the case says, if you push the upper shore and he dies, you didn't remove your shore from underneath, but you push the upper shore and he dies, that you're chayav. And if we're dealing with a short tam, why are you chayav? If you stand to incur financial loss and you're entitled to take matters into your own hands, according to Rabbi Yehuda, then why is it that if you push the upper shore, that you're chayav? So answers the Gemara, shahayalo l'shamto v'lo shamto. Because you should have removed your shore from underneath the upper shore, and you didn't do that, so you're going to be responsible. Meaning the Gemara is saying, according to Rabbi Yehuda, in a situation where you stand to incur a financial loss, you are entitled to take matters into your own hands. But nonetheless, there can still be a preferred way for you to do things in a way that we would not want you to do things. So even though we're dealing with a short time and you do stand to incur financial loss, if you push the upper shore, that's considered the improper way to take care of your shore and save your own shore. You're supposed to remove your shore from underneath the upper shore, and that'll prevent damage to the upper shore. So even though we're dealing with a case of a tam, it's still possible that dachvul elyon umeis chayav, and thus there's no kasha from this tashma on Rav Yehuda. So now continues the Gemara with the second tashma, again against Rav Yehuda. Tashma, hamimale chatzir chavero karei ayin v'karei shemen, bala chatzir mishaber v'yotze mishaber b'nech. Let's say a person fills up the chatzer, the courtyard of his friend, with pitchers of oil and pitchers of wine. Then the owner of the chatzer, the owner of this courtyard, can be mishaber v'yotze, mishaber v'nichnas. He can basically run in and out of the chatzer, in and out of the courtyard as much as he wants, in the way that he would normally use it. And he's allowed to break all of the jugs of wine and all of the jugs of oil. So seemingly, again, this is akasha against Rav Yehuda, because here we're assuming that this is a makom de lekup seida, that you're not necessarily losing anything by not being able to use your chatzer in the exact proper way. And yet the Gemara says that you're basically entitled to take matters into your own hands. You could just storm in and out of the chatzer, in and out of the courtyard, and break all the pitchers of oil and wine. So this seems to be a kasha on Rav Yehuda. It sounds like avid in ishtina l'nafshe, that a person is allowed to take matters into their own hands. So answers the Gemara to defend Rabbi Yehuda. Amar Rav Nachman bar Yitzchak. No. Mishaber v'yotze lebezdin, mishaber v'nichnas lahavi zichu Yosef. We didn't mean that the person is allowed to go in and out of the chatzer and just use his chatzer as he wants and take matters into his own hands. Rather, what we meant is he's allowed to break the flasks of oil and wine on his way out to go to Bezdin, to have this case adjudicated by Bezdin. And also, he's allowed mishaber v'nichnas, he can break the jugs on his way into the courtyard, lahavi zichu Yosef, in order to bring his proofs, in order to bring his rights to the chatzer, to bring his ownership document over the courtyard. So this is not a case where a person is taking matters into his own hands and judging the case on his own. Rather, what's going on here is he's going through the formal Beis Din process. He's going out of the courtyard to go to Beis Din, and he's coming back into the courtyard in order to defend himself. So this is not a kasha, again, on Rav Yehuda, because it's not saying that a person can take matters into his own hands. Rather, we're assuming that the person who's going to damage the other guy's flask of oil and wine is doing so only in the process of having Beis Din adjudicate this case.
We're assuming that he did this without permission, correct?
That the person was Mamala Chatzer Chavero, you're saying? Without permission? Yeah, exactly.
If he had permission, that would be different.
Right, if he had permission, then it wouldn't be a case of damage, and then certainly everybody would agree there's nothing to judge here because the person did exactly what he was entitled to. Okay, so that can...
What if he did with permission, but he blocked the pathway to get through the Chatzer? There was no other...
Well, you're not going to give somebody permission if you block all the entranceway, so we can't use it.
Right? Yeah. Okay. Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. Beautiful. So continues now the Gemara with another Tashma. Tashma minayin the nirtza shekalu lo yama v'rabo mesarev bo latzeis. How do we know that if you have an Eved Nirtza, you have an Eved Ivri who was had his ear pierced, basically he remained a slave even after the 6 years to his master, but now Shekalu lo Yamav, his days are over, even though he was supposed to be an Eved for a continued period of time, we know that the Yovel would set him free. So Shekalu lo Yamav, Rashi says, is that the Yovel came, he reached the Yovel year, and now even though he's an Eved Nirtza, even though he's had his ear pierced, he's remained enslaved to his master, he's going to go out at the Yovel. V'rabo masariv bolatzeis, and his master is pushing him, pressuring him, trying to get him out the door to end his servitude. V'chavo v'asa bo chabura, and the master accidentally injures the slave, shehu pater. So how do I know that in such a case, the master is exempt from payment? Talmud lomar lo tikhu kofer lashuv, and the Gemara darshans lo tikhu kofer lashav. So the Torah, I believe this is quoting from Parshas Maaseh, in discussing cases of gullus where a person has to go to Ir Miklat for killing another person accidentally. The Torah tells us that you're not allowed to take payment in order to exempt a person from having to go to the Ir Miklat. And the Gemara Darshan's lo tichu kofer lashav, that you can't take payment. In this case, we're assuming referring to the Eved. Rashi gives two explanations how lo tichu kofer lashav would be referring to an Eved in this case. One explanation is lo tichu kofer lashav, don't take payment or don't require payment for an Eved who wants to go back, lashuv lekilkulo, to go back in order to be an Eved and not follow the ways of the Torah. Or the other explanation is lashav to somebody who's supposed to be returning to their family at this point and they don't want to. But nonetheless, the Torah is telling us that the master in this case is pater from payment. If he's taking matters into his own hands and trying to remove the slave from his property, that you don't have to take payment. You're not allowed to take payment from the master. The master is completely exempt from this injury, from this payment that he would have to make to the slave. So again, this seems to be a kasha on Rav Yehuda, because we're assuming that the servant staying in servitude is not going to cause any financial loss to the person, to the master. And nonetheless, the Torah says that, or the Gemara tells us, that you're allowed to go ahead and take matters into your own hands. And if you do injure the slave in pushing him out of your rishus and out of servitude, you're not going to be chayav. So that seems to be a kasha on Rav Yehuda. So answers the Gemara.
Difference if he kills the slave rather than injures him?
It could make a difference. Right now, the Gemara is only assuming b'chavavo asabo chabura. But nonetheless, it still illustrates the point that you wouldn't be allowed to take matters into your own hands. Mm-hmm. So answers the Gemara, hacha b'mayaskinan be'avda ganava. You thought that this was a case, the lack of seida, where there's no financial loss to the master. But what we're really dealing with here is we're dealing with a servant who is a ganav, who steals from the property of the master. So there actually is a financial loss in leaving this servant around in your rishus, and therefore you're entitled to take matters into your own hands. So now that we're dealing with the case, b'makom d'ikab seida, a case where there is a financial loss, then even Rabbi Huda agrees that you're allowed to take matters into your own hands. But ask the Gemara an obvious question, ad haydana lo ganav, v'hashta ganav? Until now, we're assuming this servant was not a thief, because otherwise you wouldn't have left him in servitude. We assume he was operating properly as a slave. And now all of a sudden, v'hash teganav. So how can you make this crazy ukimta out of left field that we're dealing with a servant who's a thief, if until now, presumably, he wasn't a thief? So answers the Gemara, yeah, but something just changed. Ad haydana hava emsa derabe ale, hashta leisle emsa derabe ale. Until now, the servant was actually supposed to be a servant to the master. So he had the fear of his master on him, and that prevented him from stealing from the master. But now he's no longer required to serve the master anymore, even though he seemingly wants to stay and the master is pushing him out. Maybe he only wants to stay in order to keep stealing from the master, because he no longer has the fear of the master over him, and that's why all of a sudden he's become a ganav. And so that explains why, according to Rabbi Huda, you're allowed to take matters into your own hands. Another answer the Gemara gives is Rav Nachman bar Yitzchak Amar be'eved shemaser lo rabo shivcha knanis. Here we're dealing with an eved whose master gave him a shivcha knanis. Because Rashi quotes for us, the Torah tells us im adonav yitein lo isha, that the master is allowed to give the servant a wife, and if they bear children together, the children remain to the master. So we're assuming that the master gave the eved a shivcha knanis. And says the Gemara, ad haydana heteira behashta isura. Until now, so long as he was an Eved, it was permitted for him to remain with the Shivcha Knanis, because that's one of the things that an Eved is entitled to do. The master can give the Eved a Shivcha Knanis, and he's allowed to stay married to the Shivcha Knanis. But now that he's going free from servitude, he's no longer allowed to remain married to the Shivcha Knanis. So part of why Rashi says, here the master is really being Dain Dina Lenashe, it's not really his own din, it's not his own judgment, because here, we're not assuming there's a financial loss. Here, we're no longer assuming that the ganav is a thief, but there is an Isser HaTorah involved with the ganav. So with the Eved. So the master is basically trying to take care of the heavenly judgment, the heavenly requirement of being mafrish, this Eved, from the Isser that he's committing by staying or married to the Shivcha Knanis. That's why he's pushing him out of servitude, and that's why he would be putter if he accidentally injures him in the process.
I posted on the chat short machshava, so it deals with the following question: are you always permitted to prevent somebody else from doing an iser?
Are you always permitted to? Interesting question.
So he gives three answers. Okay, but but you should go listen to Shira. It's 5 minutes. It's very nice. But one of them, he says, the other is the one that created the iser by giving him the shifcha.
Uh huh.
So maybe that's why he has the right to intercede in this case, because he's the one that created the potential for the user by giving him the shifa. So, but somebody else who's doing an user, you don't have a right just to prevent this guy and hit him or beat him up to prevent him from doing an user. Mm-hmm. But something that you have no shachas to.
Very interesting.
Okay, he has beautiful. Two other answers, so it's on the chat. And you can listen to it if you want to hear the other two answers.
Okay, this is the Daf Yomi chat? I got to get in the chat so I can see these things. Beautiful. So now the Gemara is going to start to move over to other Tashimahs. Says the Gemara Tashimah, HaMeniach et HaKad B'Rishus HaRabim Uva Acher V'Niskal Ba V'Shavra Patra. So we're quoting from the Mishnah in the beginning of the Perek. The Tashimah says, if a person puts a pitcher in the Rishus HaRabim and somebody else comes and slips they break the jug, they're potter. So says the Gemara, Taima de Niskalba, Hashavra Chayav. It's only because the person slipped that they would be potter. But if they break the kad, if they break the pitcher, so then seemingly they would be Chayav. So that again seems to be Akasha on Rav Yehuda, Akasha on both, because we're dealing with a case where there is a pseida, there is a financial loss because you broke the what's going on here exactly? Here we're assuming there is a financial loss, and nonetheless you're not allowed to take matters into your own hands, because if you break it intentionally, you'd be obligated for that. So that's seemingly akasha on both Rav Yehuda and Rav Nachman. So answers the Gemara, Amar Rav Zvid Mishmei Derava, Hu Adin Afilu Shavra. Really, even if you broke the pitcher, you would also be potter. So really, if you broke the pitcher, you would also be potter. And the only reason that we teach niskal, the only reason that we teach that you slipped on the pitcher, and that's why you're potter, is because of the seifa. In the seifa, we specifically need to teach that it's a case of nitkal. Why? Because the seifa says, im huzak bal chavis chayav beniskal, that if you become injured, the owner, if you slip and become injured, the owner of the pitcher would be obligated to pay you. So the davka nitkal, it's only if you slip and become injured that the owner of the pitcher would have to pay you. Aval shavar lo, dehu azik anafshe. But if you break the pitcher intentionally, then the owner of the pitcher would not be obligated to pay you, because you're the one who injured yourself. You shouldn't have gone ahead and broken it. You punched the wall and you hurt your hand. So that's your fault, not the owner of the jug's fault. And therefore, katani resha nitzgal, therefore the beginning of the tashma, the resha also teaches that a case that you slipped. But you can't infer from the fact that the resha taught, if you slip, that if you break it, you're obligated. No, if you break it, you're also pater, because according to both Rabbi Yehuda and Rav Nachman, Avidin is dina lenafshe, a person is allowed to take matters into their own hands, b'makom de'ikap seida, in a case where there is a financial loss. Okay, now continues the Gemara, Tashma, v'katzo ta'et kapa, mamo. So the Torah tells us, in the end of Parshas Ki Teitzei, that if two people are fighting, two husbands are fighting, let's say, and one of the wives of the husbands comes and grabs the other person, the person who her husband is fighting with, in a sensitive area. So she's obligated for that response, for that embarrassment, for that responsibility. And the katzotah et kapa, because she grabbed the person in a sensitive area, you have to cut off her hand. And the Gemara darshins that when we say you have to cut off her hand, what we really mean is mamon, that you have to obligate her in payment. So my love, b'she'ena yechola lahatzil al yedei davar achir. Here we're assuming that there is a financial loss, because so long as she's standing there, as she's standing there and holding on to this person's sensitive area, there would be pain to the person. And we're assuming that there's no other way that she would be able to save her husband from the damage of the person who's fighting her. So here who's fighting him. So here we're assuming that the case is a case of seida, and lo aved inishdina lenafshe, because we obligate the woman payment for what she did. So even though there's no other way out, there's nothing she can do to save her husband from the danger imposed by the other person, she's still obligated. It sounds like a person can't take matters into her own hands, even b'makom de'ikapseid. So answers the Gemara, lo sheyichol lahatzil ayidei davar acher. You were assuming that this is a case where there's no other option. This is the only thing that she can do. But that's incorrect. There's actually another means, another method by which she could save her husband, in which case she's going to be obligated for, she's going to be required to pay for doing this less than ideal way of saving her husband, just like we had said before, that if there's another way out, right, we said by the two shvarim, by the two oxes, that if you could have taken your ox out from underneath, then you shouldn't have pushed the upper ox. So to here, if there was another way out, you shouldn't have grabbed the person in a sensitive area.
When she has to pay, is it boshes or is it boshes and sar?
I think the assumption here is just boshet, because here we're dealing with just the case of boshet. Behechezika bimvushav, the Torah tells us, you're grabbing the sensitive area, which is particularly embarrassing. But if there was also tsar involved, then presumably you'd have to pay tsar too. So ihachi, says the Gemara, adatani seifa v'shal chayada prat l'shliach beizdin. If it's true that you could be matzil al yedei davar, sorry, I skipped a line here. Lo sheyichol lahatzil al yedei davar acher. So says the Gemara, aval ena yichol lahatzil al yedei davar acher p'tura. If you're not able to save through another means, would you be pater and you would not have to pay mamon? So ihachi adatani seifa b'shalcha yada prat l'shliach beizdin. When the seifa continues on and says, one who stretches out their hand, that the woman is stretching out her hand and grabbing the sensitive area, that comes to exclude a shliach beizdin, that somebody sent by beizdin would not be obligated for doing this. Liflog v'lini b'dida b'medvar memurim b'sheyichol lahatzil al yedei davar acher. Abel ena yichol lahatzil al yedei davar acher p'tura. Why did we have to go to a case of a shliach beizdin to tell you that you're pater? If the only reason that you're obligated is because you could have saved through another way, then the seifa, which is trying to find a case where you're not going to be obligated, should just tell us that if you're not able to be matzil al yedei davar acher, you're pater. So why did we jump to this case of shliach beizdin? Seemingly we could have just said that there's no other way by which you could have saved your husband, and in such a case you'd be pater. So the Gemara says, hachanami kamar, that's really what we meant when we said shliach beizdin. What we mean to say is as follows. When is it true that you're obligated to pay mamon? Precisely when you could have saved your husband through another means. But if you're not able to save your husband through any other means, then your hand becomes like a shliach beizdin. It becomes like somebody who was appointed by beizdin who would for sure be pater. And then in such a case, you're also pater. So really there's no kasha from this case, because even though it's a makom dikip seida, we're assuming there was no other way that you could have saved your husband, and thus you were. There was another way that you could have saved your husband, and that's why you'd be obligated to pay. But if there was not another way that you could save your husband, then you would not be obligated to pay. Continues the Gemara. Tashima, hareisha hayta derech harabim overes betoch sadeu, notla venotam lahem min atzad, ma shenotan notan v'shelo lo higiu. Let's say a case happens where the path of the Rabbim, the path that the masses travel on, is traveling through your field, and you take that path, you want to seize it basically back from the public domain, and you're going to replace it with some land on the other side of your field, in another area. You basically want to take back what the Rabbim has taken from you, and you want to give them other land in exchange. So the Gemara says the din there is mashenatan natan, v'shelo lo higio. What you give them back, when you're giving them land from the side of your field, we assume that they actually take control over that land, and what you gave them back is valid, is chal, but you don't get back your original land.
What forces you to say that the rabbin took it after he owned it? Maybe it was there before that he owned the field.
Oh, that's interesting. I guess, yeah, certainly also possible. I was assuming because it was Sadehu, because it was his field, that he already had it in advance. But I think what you're saying, first of all, is possible. Probably also is more likely that it happened to be there, but it's in the middle of his field. And so now he wants to move it around and give them a different path. So certainly also possible. I guess the question is, though, the Gemara's next question is, V'i amar avin inish dina l'nafshe, linkot pizarra v'leit. If you assume that a person is allowed to take matters into his own hands, then why doesn't he just take his staff, take his walking stick, and go and sit on the property that the rabbim is using as the derech harabim? So the question is, why would this be considered dina l'nafshe? If the rabbim were there first, before you own the field, then why is it that you're entitled to that land? Why are you allowed to take matters into your own hands here?
That's what I'm saying. So that's why it's got to be the rabbin took it after he bought the land.
Right, so that's what I was assuming at the beginning, right? So I think certainly that would make sense. But I guess you could say that maybe somebody else owned the field, and then all of a sudden you buy the field. So even though the rabbin preceded you, you bought the ownership of the field, in which case you should have the rights over the rabbin. So here the Gemara has a question. If you stand to incur financial loss here because the rabbin is using your property, why can't you just go and put your foot down and sit on the land that the rabbin took over? So Amar of Zid Mishmei Derava, Gzera Shemiyitin Lahem Derech Akaltan. Really, you should have been able to take matters into your own hands and exchange some of your land for the land that the rabbin is using. But we're concerned that you're going to give them a crooked path. You're going to give them a less than ideal path, in which case it's not going to be a fair exchange. So we can't allow you to take matters into your own hands. Rav Masharshi Amar, Benoten Lahem Derech Akaltan. You don't have to assume that we're concerned that you might give them a subpar land. But let's assume the case actually is one where you did give them a subpar land. So that's why this exchange is not going to work, because you're not replacing the land with fair value, with adequate land.
So why should the other parcel, the other street, why should it be a good street then?
So that's going to be the Gemara's question. Rav Ashi Amar, we'll just go one more line, and then the Gemara's going to ask exactly that. Rav Ashi Amar, kol min atzad derech akalton hu, krova lezeh v'krova lezeh. And Rav Ashi says, we specifically said that the land you're giving them back is min atzad, is from the side. So Rav Ashi says any land that's on the side is by definition a subpar land, because it's automatically krova lezeh, it's closer to some people, but it's rechoka lezeh. Right. So it might be more advantageous for some people, but for some people it's not going to be advantageous, and therefore you're not allowed to replace the land in the middle of your field, take it back, and give them land on the side. Mm-hmm. So then I ask the Gemara if this is not really a fair exchange. Ihachi, there are different girsas here. Our girsa, at least the girsa that I have, is amai shelo lo higio. Why is it that your land does not come back to you? Tosos basically changes it, not that it should be amai shelo lo higio, but why is it mai shenatan natan? Why is, and this is what Rudy was saying before, why is the land that you give them back considered their land now all of a sudden? If you can't take matters into your own hands, and this is not a fair exchange, then the land should not become theirs. Lema lehu shkulu ditchu mehavu li didi. Why don't you say back to the rabbin that they should take their property and give me back my property? So, okay, I can't make this exchange. So what I gave you on the side is not yours, and you guys just keep the middle land. So answers the Gemara, mishum de Rav Yehuda, de amar Rav Yehuda, meitzer sheyechziko bo rabbim, aser lekalkala. The reason that the land that you gave them is binding is because of the principle of Rav Yehuda. Rav Yehuda says that a path that the rabbin has taken over, you're not allowed to damage, you're not allowed to take back. So in this case, since the rabbin started to use this path, it's considered to be theirs.
So why doesn't that apply to the first one also?
So the prop... Well, it would, right? Because we're assuming that that property does stay the rabbin's. Right. So you're saying what was the Havamina?
Yeah.
Well, I think the Havamina was that we're not holding like the Din of Rav Yehuda, and that's why we thought that you could get back the land that you gave them. So the answer is that... that you're not allowed to take it back, in which case it is binding and you can't take matters into your own hands. So now the Gemara just concludes with the last Tashma. Tashma, Bala Bayi Shinich Pea Mitzarechad Uva Ani Eminat Mitzarecher Zev Zev Pea. If a person leaves over Pea in his field, he leaves over part of the field for the Aniyim to take, like he's supposed to, and then the Aniyim come and they start picking the produce from the other side of the field. So we assume that both parts of the field are considered Pea. If you assume that a person is allowed to take matters into their own hands, then why are both fields considered peya? The person should just take their staff and go in the land that the Aniyim are trying to take and take it back, and it shouldn't be considered Peah. And the land that he tried to give the Aniyim as Peah, only that land should be Peah. So Amar Rava, Mai Zev Zev Peah, the Pochon Mina Maiser. Rava says, really the person could take back the land, or at least it wouldn't necessarily belong to the Aniyim. But when we say that they're both considered Peah, what we mean is that both lands, both the land that the Aniyim took and the land that you left over for the Aniyim to take, are considered exempt from Meiser. Kidatanya Hamafkir at Karma Vihishkin Babokir Ubatro, Chayev, Beperit, Uva Ololo, Vishikha, Ubepeya, Upater Mina Meiser. The Brisa tells us that if a person is Mafkir, their vineyard, their Mafkir, their Karam, they make it totally ownerless. And then the next day they get up and they start harvesting the grapes from the vineyard. So it would be Chayev in various tithes that you have to separate from your produce, Peret and Ololo, Shikha and Peya, but it'd be Pater Mina Meiser. So if we assume that somebody who makes their kerem, hefker, becomes pater from Meiser, the same is true here when you leave over this land as Peah. Even though the Aniyim don't actually come and take it, it's going to remain pater mina Meiser. That's really what we meant when we said that both lands are considered Peah, but really you would be allowed to take matters into your own hands. The Aniyim shouldn't be taking Peah from the land that you did not designate. They should only be taking it from the land that you did designate it, and thus your land remains Pater mina meiser, like Peah, because you separated it. Okay, so says the Mishnah, Nishbur akad o birshus harabim, v'huchlach echad b'mayim, o shalako b'charsis chayav. Let's say a person has a pitcher in the Rishus harabim, and it breaks, and now somebody either slips on the water that came out of the pitcher, or they became injured with part of the vessel, part of the earthenware, like the shard that broke from the pitcher, so you'd be obligated for that. Rabbi Huda omer b'miskavin chayav b'ein o miskavin pater. Rav Yehuda says you're only chayav if you have kavana, if it's with intent, but if it's not with intent, then you would be pater. So the Gemara is going to have to explain exactly what Rabbi Yehuda means. So Amar Rabbi Yehuda Marav, Lo Shanu Elisha Tinfu Kalev.
Is this a little bit like Bor?
Yeah, this is exactly like Bor, and that's going to be the Gemara's discussion, the various positions of Rav and Shmuel about a Bor, and specifically a Bor B'shus HaRavim. So that's what we're about to see right now. Amar Rav Yehuda Marav, Lo Shanu Elisha Tinfu Kalev B'mayim. It's only true that you're obligated when a person, let's say, slips in the water or gets injured through the earthenware, if his kalim became dirtied through the water from your pitcher. Aval hu atzmo pater. If the person himself become injured, then the owner of the pitcher would be pater. Why? Because karka olam hezikaso. We assume that it's basically the ground of the earth that injured this person. We assume that this pitcher, this water, is ownerless. And it's just basically the ground that injured this person. The person's pitcher was just mamono shozeh gromo ba'alma of it. All you're doing is you're causing indirect damage. But it's the ground that's responsible. And Rashi tells us, this is Rav l'taymei da'amar l'kaman bor shechibo alav Torah l'havalo v'lo l'chavato. Rav holds that the bor that the Torah obligates you for is really injuring because of, like, let's say, the heat of the bore. It's the airspace of the bore, we assume, that's injuring the person, but it's not the actual impact, the contact, the damage of the bore that's causing the damage to the person. So in this case, when the person slips on this supposed bore, it becomes injured, we treat that as karka olam, because you're only going to be obligated for the damages of a bore if it's damaging through the airspace. Now, ki amrisa kami dishmuel amar li michti. When I said this statement, this is Rabbi Huda talking, he had just quoted from Rav, and now he says, when I said this statement in front of Shmuel, he said, we have to analyze this case. Avno eskino maso miboro lamanu. When we spoke about somebody's stone, somebody's knife, or somebody's load, somebody's burden, injuring, we learned out those laws from the laws of a boar. V'kulan anikore bahen shor velo adam chamor velo kelim. And in all of those cases, because they're parallel to a boar, I can take the Gemara's drasha by a boar and apply it to these cases. The Gemara darshans that we say when something gets injured in a boar, the Torah speaks specifically about a shor and a chamor, specifically about an ox and a donkey. And Chazal brilliantly darshan, shor velo adam, when the Torah says that you're obligated for the damages caused to an ox, that's coming to exclude the damages caused to a person. And chamor velo kalim, when the Torah tells us that you're obligated for the damages that occur to a donkey, that's to exclude the damages that occur to kalim. So if something were to happen to this person's kalim, we would assume that the owner of the boar, the owner of the pitcher, which in this case is acting as a boar, is pater because chomor velo kelim, you're not obligated for the damages to kelim. V'hani mili le'inyan katala, but that's only true with regards to killing. It's only true that you're going to be pater from Adam and kelim if you actually kill them. Aval le'inyan nizakin, Adam chayav v'kelim peturim. But when it comes to damage, if a person is damaged, you're actually liable. And if vessels are damaged, then you're pater. So we could assume that a person became damaged through this boar, through this cod, and you would still be chayav according to Shmuel, because when it comes to nizakin, you are obligated for the damages that occur to a person. The Rav, Hani Mili Hecha Dafkirinu, Aba Hecha Dafkirinu, Mamonuhu. Rav says, it would only be true that you'd be obligated for the damages that occur to a person if you're mafkir the boar, because we assume that the boar that a person is responsible for is a boar that he was mafkir, that he declared ownerless. But in a case where you don't declare it ownerless, then it would be treated as your own property, it would be treated like a shore, in which case you would be obligated for the damages caused to it. So in this case, you would not be chayav, according to Rav, if the person himself becomes injured, because we would say karka olam hezikasa. So now ask the Gemara Akasha, Mativ Rav Oshia. Rav Oshia quotes a brisa that's going to pose Akasha both to Rav and Shmuel. Benafal shama shor o chamor. When we have a boar, the Torah tells us, as we just mentioned, that an ox or a donkey falls into the boar. And the Gemara Darshan, shor velo adam, chamor velo kelim. The fact that the Torah uses the word shor is to exclude an adam. You wouldn't be obligated for the damages incurred to an adam.
Right.
And chamor, the fact that the Torah uses the language of a donkey, tells us that you wouldn't be obligated for the damage that occurs to vessels. Mikan amru, nafal letocho shor vekela v'nishtabru, chamor vekela v'nishkarau, chayav ala behema, upater al hakelim. From here we learn that, let's say, an ox falls into the boar with its vessels on it, or a donkey falls into the boar with its vessels on it, and the vessels of the ox break, or the vessels of the donkey rip, you'd be obligated for the animal, and you'd be pater on the kelim, because below kelim, you're not obligated for the damage of kelim in a boar. And the Gemara says, what's that comparable to? That's comparable to somebody who leaves their stone, or their knife, or their burden in the Rishas Harabim, and it damages. So now the Gemara interrupts before it gets to its question, and it says, Adarabba, ma doma lezemi bayale. What is similar to this? Meaning, we're comparing nafal letocho shor v'kela v'nishtabaru. If an ox or a donkey falls into the boar with its vessels, we're comparing that to avno and skino maso, to a case of a knife or a stone or a load. But those things are not explicit in the Torah. Those we extrapolated from the obligations of a boar. So why are we comparing nafal letocho shor v'kela, the things that are explicit in the Torah, to cases of a stone or a knife or a burden which are not explicit? It should really be ma doma lezeh, what's comparable to nafal letocho shor, what's comparable to an ox or a donkey falling into the boar, because that's what's explicit in the Torah. And so the Gemara makes that change. Elam ma doma lezeh, avno uskino maso, sheinicham bishur sarabim, vihiziko. What's comparable to a case of an ox or a donkey falling into the boar? That is a case of a knife or a stone of a load, or a load. So the Gemara just had to make that correction in the Braisa. But then the Braisa continues, lefikach imitiach tzolchiso be'even chayav. And therefore, if somebody smashes a person's flask on your stone, you'd be chayav, because avno, skino, maso are going to be obligated. So we say reisha is a kasha l'rav, v'seifa kasha l'shmuel. The beginning is going to be a kasha on Rav. Why? Because in the beginning we said that you'd be pater for the kelim, and Rav assumes that you could be chayav for the kelim. And the Seifa is going to be a kasha on Shmuel, because in the Seifa we say that hitiach tzulchiso be'even chayav, the one who hits the flask of a person is chayav, right? Because that sounds like we're obligating a person midin shor from an ox, and not based on boar, not based on a pit. If it was based on a pit, we would expect that kalim would be pater. So why would it be that if you smash a person's flask, that you're going to be chayav? So Rav and Shmuel are both going to answer this brisa in a way that reflects their opinion, or that supports them. Oh, I asked the Gemara first before that. The Braisa is inherently contradictory, because the beginning of the Braisa says that you're Pater, and the Seif of the Braisa says that you're Chayev. So even though it poses a problem for Rav in the Reisha, because it says you're Pater, and for Shmuel in the Seifa, because it says you're Chayev, it also poses an internal contradiction, because those two principles seem to be against each other. Ella, Rav, Metaritz Latayme, Ushmuel, Metaritz Latayme. So the Gemara says, Rav and Shmuel are both going to explain the Braisa in their own way. Rav, Metaritz Latayme, Bamidvar, Memurim, Kishayif Kiran, Avaloif Kiran, Chayav. Rav says it's only true that you're going to be putter in the beginning if you were mafgir the kalim. But if you were not mafgir the kalim, then you would actually be chayav. And the fikach hitiach tzolchiso be'evin chayav. Therefore, if you break somebody's flask on a stone, you're going to be chayav. So then it fits perfectly with Rav, because we're assuming you'll only be pater if you were mafgir. But if you were not mafgir it, then it would be treated like your ox, and your ox would be obligated for breaking kalim. And that's why the Seifa says that if you break the person's flask on the stone, you're going to be obligated. Ushmuel mitarth l'taymei, hashta de'amarta avno eskino maso kiboro dami. Shmuel has to explain the Seifa, which says that you're obligated on kalim, even though he's treating it as a boar, and the principle should be shor v'lo adam, chomer v'lo kalim, that kalim should be chayav. So Shmuel explains that now that we're saying in the end of the Brisa that your stone or your knife or your load that damage are treated like a pit, then the Rabbi Yehuda the mechayev al niske kalim ebor the fikach itiach tolchiso be'even chayev. According to Rabbi Yehuda, who rejects the drasha of chamor velo kalim, he does hold of shor velo adam, but he doesn't hold of chamor velo kalim. He doesn't think that kalim are exempt from damages in a boar. So according to Rabbi Yehuda, then itiach tolchiso be'even chayav. If you break someone's flask, you break someone's vessel, you break someone's kli against a stone, you would actually be chayav. But that's not according to Shmuel, because Shmuel holds that you're not obligated for damaging a kli and a boar. Really, it's only according to the position of Rabbi Yehuda that kalim are chayav the boar. Okay, now continue. Now we're basically done with the kashas and Rav and Shmuel. Amar Rabbi Elazar, lo shanu el shemit. Yeah.
I have a quick question on Rav. That if you were mafkir it, then you'd be potter. If an obstacle that should surround him is bor, then you can't be mafkir it, because a bor is one of those things that even though it's not yours, the Torah made it yours.
Right.
So what do you mean if you mafkir it?
No. So the assumption is that you should. Right. So you could still be mafkirid and still be obligated, right? I know exactly what you're referring to. Beautiful connection is the shnei adim that are not in your rishus, and the Torah made them as if they're in your rishus in order to make you chayav. Abor b'shus harabim and chametz on Pesach, right? Exactly. But so Rav says, in Achanami, you were mafkir, you did declare it ownerless, it's not yours. And yet the Torah does obligate you for it, like you're saying, but you're only obligated for havalo below the chavato. You're only obligated for damages through the airspace, not for damages through the contact. So here, even though you were mafkir, you did declare it ownerless, nonetheless, you are going to be responsible, but you'll only be responsible for airspace damage. And here, in some cases, we're dealing with direct contact damage, in which case you'd be putter. In other cases, even if it was airspace damage, let's say, still we have the drasha of chamor v'lo kalim, so you're going to be exempt from damaging the vessels. But certainly, you're absolutely right that the boar that you are chayav for is not, it's not yours technically, and that's why Rav says it must be that you declare it ownerless, but nonetheless, the Torah puts it in your rishos. I just have a few more minutes, so let's try to finish up here. Amar b'lazer lo shanu ela shenitkal be'evin v'nishof be'evin. It's only true that you'd be obligated to pay for the person's damages if he slips on the stone and brushes up against the stone. But if he slips on the ground and brushes up against the stone, then you'd be pater. And the Gemara says, "Come on, delo k'Rabbi Nassan." That's not like Rabbi Nassan, because Rabbi Nassan holds, we'll see it a little bit later in the Masechta, that in a case where two parties basically contribute to the damage, and you're not able to collect all the damage from the first party, you could collect it from the second party. So in this case, where you slip on the ground and then you hit the rock, some of the damage is caused by the rock, and nonetheless, we say your potter, that must be the lo kerabinas. Ikad Amri, another version of Rabbi Elazar's statement is lo tema benitka be'evin benishof be'evin hud mechayim, aval nitka bekarka benishof be'evin potter. Don't say that you're only obligated to pay for the person's damage if he slips on the rock and brushes up against the rock. But if he slips on the ground and brushes up against the rock, you'd be exempt. Ela afilu nitka bekarka v'nishof be'evin chayav. Rather, even if you slip on the ground and then you brush up against the rock, you're still going to be obligated. And that's keman k'Rabbi Nassan. This version of the statement actually is exactly like Rabbi Nassan, because it assumes that when one party is not able to cover the complete payment, the second party would be responsible. And that's why in this case, when you slipped on the ground, the rock is also going to be responsible. You guys want to keep going, or you want to... do you want to get to the Amud Aleph? You guys want to stop at the two dots? Whatever you guys want.
Okay, perfect.
Okay, shkoyach gadol.